Medicom Medical Publishers produces peer-reviewed reports and highlights on major medical meetings. We bring the Congress to the physician.
Welcome to this podcast brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. My name is Dr. Rachel Giles, and I am the Medical Science Officer at Medicom. Today, I'd like to talk about six of the presentations that were presented at the IASLC World Conference on Lung Cancer, which was held virtually between the 8th and the 14th of September 2021. Enjoy listening.
Thank you to all the healthcare professionals who have worked so hard to bring us through the current pandemic.
With regard to novel therapy approaches, Professor Ernst Nadel from the Catalan Institute of Oncology in Spain presented the multicenter non-randomized phase 2 atezo-brain trial, which was designed to evaluate the efficacy of atezolizumab with respect to progression-free survival in patients with non-small cell lung cancer and with asymptomatic brain metastases. Atezo-brain recruited 40 such patients, including any patients with EGFR mutations or ALK fusions. Baseline use of corticosteroids was permitted. Patients completed 4 to 6 cycles of carboplatin with the AUC5 on day 1 of each 3-week cycle, plus pemetrexed, 500 milligrams per square meter, intravenously on day 1 and for each 3-week cycle, and atezolizumab, so 1,200 milligrams intravenously on day 1 of each 3-week cycle. And then they continued maintenance pemetrexed and atezolizumab until either unacceptable toxicity was reached, their disease progressed, or they completed 2 years of therapy. In addition, folic acid, vitamin B12, and dexamethasone 4 milligrams twice daily was administered 1 day before and after pemetrexed treatment. Co-primary endpoints were safety and investigator-based progression-free survival according to the response assessment in neuro-oncology, so the RANO, for the brain disease, and RESIST criteria for the systemic disease. Following a median of 4 cycles of carboplatin and 8.5 cycles of pemetrexed and atezolizumab, the primary rate of progression-free survival at 12 weeks was 60%. Fatigue and anemia were the most frequently reported adverse events. Most treatment-related adverse events were grade 1 or 2, and the grade 3 to 4 toxicity rates was 27.5%. There were no fatal adverse events. After a median follow-up period of about 17.3 months, the median systemic progression-free survival was 8.9 months, with an 18-month progression-free survival rate of 24.9%. The median intracranial progression-free survival was 6.9 months, with an 18-month PFS rate of 10.4%. The 2-year overall survival rate was 32%. So the investigators concluded from the atezo-brain study that the safety profile and efficacy of atezolizumab combined with carboplatin and pemetrexed is favorable for patients who have NSCLC and untreated brain metastases. The interim results of a phase 2 study suggested that patients with extensive stage small cell lung cancer and platinum sensitivity may be good candidates for maintenance treatment with immune checkpoint inhibitors and polyadenosine diphosphate ribose polymerase inhibitors, better known as PARP inhibitors. And in this particular study, they were looking at nivolumab and rucaparib. Preclinical studies have demonstrated that PARP inhibitors possess cytotoxic activity as single agent and in combination with immune checkpoint inhibitors in small cell lung cancer. However, this combination has not been tried to date as first-line therapy for small cell lung cancer. Investigators hypothesized that adding a PARP inhibitor to immune checkpoint inhibition could enhance the efficacy of the immune checkpoint inhibitor. To this end, a phase 2 trial evaluated the response and survival rates associated with the administration of nivolumab and rucaparib to patients with extensive stage small cell lung cancer. The trial recruited 20 patients with stage 4 extensive stage small cell lung cancer who had achieved either a partial response or a complete response following treatment with platinum-based chemotherapies. Participants were excluded if they'd undergone prior immune checkpoint inhibition therapy. The starting dose of oral rucaparib was 600 milligrams twice daily, and nivolumab was administered as an intravenous infusion once every 4 weeks at a fixed dose of 480 milligrams. The primary endpoint of the study was progression-free survival after response to an initial platinum-based therapy. The presentation was held by Dr. Aman Chuan of the University of Kentucky in the United States, and he presented interim data from this trial. All enrolled patients had achieved a partial response in accordance with the response evaluation criteria in solid tumors, RECIST. The median progression-free survival from the initiation of maintenance therapy was 2.67 months, and the median progression-free survival from time of diagnosis on frontline therapy, which included therapy from chemotherapy followed by maintenance rucaparib and nivolumab, was 7.27 months. Dr. Chowin emphasized that 25% of the patients remained on maintenance therapy. No deaths occurred during the study. One patient withdrew from the trial due to a grade 4 hepatotoxicity. Dr. Chowin concluded that the combination of immune checkpoint inhibitors and PARP inhibitors therapy seems to be well tolerated at the time of this interim analysis anyway. Investigators are currently evaluating immune predictors of a durable response. The trial completion is anticipated at the end of this year in December 2021. All right, next we're going to cover a fairly small study, but with a fairly complex trial design, so bear with us here. So this was for patients with either EGFR or anaplastic lymphoma kinase, so ALK fusions, in non-small cell lung cancer, and the guidelines recommend that treatment should be with targeted tyrosine kinase inhibitors. So current progression-free survival periods with targeted therapies range from 10 to 19 months in patients with EGFR positive non-small cell lung cancer and 10 to 34 months, so slightly longer, in patients with ALK fusions, so ALK positive NSCLC. However, there's a need for treatment options for TKI refractory EGFR ALK positive non-small cell lung cancers. Most commonly, platinum-based chemotherapy is implemented following tyrosine kinase therapy, eliciting a response rate of about 30% and affording about 4 to 5 months of progression-free survival. So investigators of a phase 2 trial hypothesized that the addition of pembrolizumab could enhance the efficacy of carboplatin and pemetrexed protocol in TKI refractory EGFR or ALK-positive NSCLC. So of the 33 patients with NSCLC enrolled, 26 had EGFR mutations and 7 had ALK rearrangements. All patients completed 4 cycles of carboplatin and pembrolizumab plus pembrolizumab, followed by maintenance treatment with pembrolizumab and pembrolizumab for 2 years. Professor Shirish Gadgil from the University of Michigan in the United States presented the 1-year follow-up results. The primary outcome measure, response rate within 12 months, was 42.3% in the EGFR positive cohort and 28.6% in the ALK positive cohort, and that was deemed limited activity for the ALK cohort. Secondary outcome measures were progression-free survival and overall survival at 12 months, and the median PFS was 8.3 months in the EGFR positive cohort and 2.9 months in the ALK positive cohort. The median overall survival was 22.2 months in the EGFR positive cohort and 2.9 months in the ALK rearrangement cohort. No unexpected adverse events occurred in any of the cohorts, and the most common adverse events were fatigue, gastrointestinal symptoms, and cytopenia. The investigators concluded that these results warrant further evaluation for the treatment with pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy, at least in patients with EGFR-positive disease, and not with the subgroup of patients with ALK rearrangements. So we all know that COVID-19 pandemic has impacted lung cancer patients in multiple ways. And the Go2 Foundation for Lung Cancer, it's an organization founded by patients and survivors of lung cancer that aims to serve, extend, and improve the lives of those with lung cancer. They have nearly 800 centers throughout the U.S., and they provide screening, education, and support services. They conduct annual surveys to provide both qualitative and quantitative data about the journey of patients with lung cancer. In 2020, additional questions were added to their normal surveys to assess the impact of COVID-19 on the patient journey. Ms. Rashmi Acharya from the Go2 Foundation for Lung Cancer in the United States presented these survey findings. Among the 27 centers that responded to the survey, 60% noted a decrease in the number of new lung cancer diagnoses during the pandemic as compared with 2019. Centers consistently expressed concern that patients with lung cancer would experience delayed diagnosis and/or treatment due to the pandemic. In 2020, the support helpline offered by the foundation reported a 35% decrease in call volume. The average change in helpline usage between quarters 1 and 2 of 2018 and 2019 was 3%, but in 2020 there was a 13% decrease in the helpline usage during the same period. There was also a considerable decrease in the number of requests from healthcare providers for printed educational materials, requests that in 2020 were down by 38% as compared with the previous year. The researchers concluded that these findings highlight the impact that COVID-19 has had and is continuing to have on patients with lung cancer. They further stated that these data are important to help prepare for the post-pandemic period and making plans going forward. Lung Cancer Europe, it's a pan-European platform for lung cancer patient advocacy groups, advocates for policies to improve the detection and management of lung cancer across Europe. They use evidence-based advocacy to influence policies and prioritize research commitments. In an online survey conducted between the 20th of May and 25th of June 2020, it explored the psychosocial impact of lung cancer on patients and their caregivers across four domains: emotional well-being, daily life, family and loved ones, and work and finances. The survey generated a total of 559 responses, of which 365 were patients with lung cancer and 194 were caregivers. And its findings were presented by Dr. Anna Marie Baird of the Lung Cancer Europe in Switzerland. Both groups reported that their emotional well-being had been negatively affected by lung cancer, with 77.2% of the caregivers reporting this and 52.5% of the patients. The top four emotions reported were uncertainty, sadness, anxiety, and fear. Impact on daily life was considered through physical limitations, activities of daily living, financial impact, work impact, and family and loved ones. The top three physical limitations were pain, breathlessness, and fatigue. Approximately 20% of patients reported that they were careful about who they shared their diagnosis of lung cancer with, a decision that led to decreased contact with family and loved ones. Approximately 33% of respondents reported a negative impact on their work, either their own or that of someone within their household. The survey also sought to identify areas of unmet needs in the lung cancer community. It found that supportive care was lacking. The top three unmet needs were related to psychological support, symptom control, and impact on family and loved ones. A large proportion of respondents reported that they had not received supportive care from a patient support organization or an NGO. Take-home messages of the survey were the need to raise awareness of support services available for patients with lung cancer and the need to integrate psychosocial services into the lung cancer care pathway. At the WCLC this year, there was a new preoperative classification scheme which was proposed for oligometastatic non-small cell lung cancer. Dr. Luca Bertolaccini from the European Institute of Oncology in Italy reminded the delegates of his team's previous retrospective study, which analyzed long-term outcomes of synchronous oligometastatic NSCLC patients who had been treated with radical surgery with the intent of identifying factors associated with better outcomes. The longest survival times were observed in patients with synchronous lung oligometastatic non-PN2 disease. The disease's next step was to identify preoperative risk factors, which seems to be associated with better post-surgical outcomes. Dr. Bertolaccini shared the results of this multi-center retrospective study. The median overall survival and progression-free survival periods were estimated by the reverse Kaplan-Meier method in retrospective review of 281 patient records. Using a stratified backward stepwise Cox regression model, a prognostic risk classification scheme consisting of four groups was created. The parameters identified as contributory to prognosis were age, site of metastasis, clinical nodal status, and induction treatment. Using these four parameters, the following risk classifications were proposed. Group A had no risk factors present, Group B had one risk factor, Group C two risk factors, and Group D had three or more risk factors. Patients in Group A had the longest overall survival, while patients in Group D had the shortest overall survival. Dr. Bertolaccini emphasized that for optimal outcomes of oligometastatic NSCLC, patient selection is critical to identify appropriate subsets. He proposed that following validation of this preoperative risk classification scheme, it may be used to support decision-making regarding patient management, as well as to assist appropriate patient selection for future clinical trials. That's all the time we have for this week's podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in and listening to it. I hope you learned something. Stay safe and stay healthy.
This podcast was produced by Medicom Medical Publishers.